Thank you.
My name is Richard, and I'm an alcoholic.
Richard.
And this is who?
Apologies. My name is Kyle. I'm an alcoholic.
And, you know, here we are at the eighth week, and we only have 12. We made a few promises to the group when we first started. We said we hope that we provide some new perspectives, different ways of looking at the material that might be fruitful for you. And we hope we've delivered on that promise. We've also promised that we would treat you guys like you're a bunch of newcomers. And we weren't going to talk about the philosophical innuendos that one can gather from reading the introductions and, you know, how the whole program is encapsulated in the last part of Bill's story, but just that we'd kind of approach it like if we were bringing somebody new through it. And how would that be? Because we're assuming that most people here have had an experience with the book. So we're going to share a bit of our experience. And many, in my opinion, and I hope Kyle agrees, that although many times you hear in the program that the program is outlined on the first 164 pages of the book, that I believe that after you've read 104 pages of the book, you've already finished reading Working with Others, and you've already done your 12th step. Yes, the chapter to the wives, the letter to the employers, and the vision for you are very interesting extra reads. But the program itself, the actual program of recovery, is outlined on 104 pages. And in that 104 pages, we said a long time ago that the doctor's opinion, actually, in the original text of the big book, was page 1. Right? So we don't get to the chapter we're at now, we agnostics, till 40 pages in. So if you add back in the doctor's opinion, you could very safely assume that half of this book is dedicated to the proposition of step 1. Just about recognizing that I have alcoholism. Just about understanding the physical allergy to it. Just about understanding the mental obsession. And we see it demonstrated over and over again as we read. I think, who was it that said in the meeting, she said, "You guys are giving an excruciating read of this material." And so we kept pointing out again and again and again, look at the example here of the physical allergy. Look at the example of the mental obsession. Look at how willpower does not do it. Look at how self-knowledge does not do it. Look at how even fear, although it may sober you up a bit, does not seem to do it. So this whole 50 pages is bringing us to this proposition that we're going to need some type of spiritual awakening. Many people, when they go work with someone, will talk about they'll talk about God right after they talk about Bill's story. They'll say, "Oh, look at what Bill did. Bill got with God and all this stuff." But I don't like to do that if I was working with a new person. I'd probably say something like, maybe it's just a matter of being willing to set aside some of the old prejudices that we've had about our conception of God at this point. Maybe it's just becoming willing to be willing that'll give us enough momentum to move forward. Because I still think we're in the convincing stage. And before I say anything more, do you want to kind of chime in here, or should I keep flying around with this? Because I don't want to start. I just want to kind of get some of your general impressions about where we've been so far. And
the only other thing I'd like to add is, at the very least, I have encountered many recovered alcoholics who seem to be of the opinion that theirs is the definitive approach to the text. That is not what we're up here to do. We are up here to offer our interpretation of the text, our understanding of it, the way we ourselves were taught. This is not the be-all, end-all big book workshop. You will not be cured after these 12 weeks. I regret to inform you.
Darn.
We're up here to let you know our experience with the text. That's it. Nothing more, nothing less. If you get something new out of this, then that's really cool. And ultimately, we're up here to help ourselves. And if we can be of service to others in doing that, that's a good night, man. You know? So, just we tried to say this once a week, every week for the past 8 weeks. This is not the definitive approach to the book. This is our experience. And ultimately, we stand on the shoulders of giants. We stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. Rich had a bit of homework for you guys to do. We talked about last week.
Before, did anyone do the homework, by the way? Raise your hand. This is truly a group of alcoholics. Not only does no one listen, no one does any action. But now, so let's start this off by saying nobody did the homework, but the homework was that since we're going to be talking about what our own concept of God is, what our own construct is, that it might be nice to sit back and think to yourself, what do I think of, you know, when I see God? Sometimes, you know, I described God one time as I was absolutely sure that God looked like Charlton Heston in the Ten Commandments. I was absolutely sure God had a big white beard and sat in something like Lincoln's throne in Washington, D.C. I thought Jesus was the vice president and the apostles were the Supreme Court. This was my conception of God before I came in. But the main thing about it was is that it was a cold and God that didn't really like me because I was a sinner. So someone told me early on in the program, hey, Rich man, you got to fire your old God. And you got to find a new way of approaching this, because a God that's punishing and cruel and hates you is not going to be the God that you're going to call on when suddenly happens. And suddenly it's going to happen. So we labored and labored on this, and we know these examples again and again. So now hopefully at this point, I'm convinced I have a problem. If I'm not convinced I'm an alcoholic at this point of the book, I'm not even going to want to think about God. It's not going to be something that is going to be something appealing to me. Right? I'm going to have to be at that hopeless state. If I'm at that hopeless state and I know there's no other alternative, we're about to have the God conversation. And as Kyle said, Jesse was going to bring a hammer and put God on it. We're going to pull out the God, open up the God box, and we're going to talk about God. And let's see if we can find any validation of some of the assumptions that we've already made going so far. In the first paragraph, we read, in the preceding chapters, you have learned something about alcoholism. Hey, what were the preceding chapters? Learning something about alcoholism. Could that be a hint as to what those chapters were about? It was about learning about alcoholism. We hope that we have made the clear distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. And by the way, as a kind of a primer, we already dispatched the illusion that an alcoholic is only somebody who drinks all the time, that you can drink on the weekends. It says it right in the doctor's opinion. What about the real alcoholic? He may or may not start off as a social drinker. It says it right there. He may become a continuous hard drinker, but as soon as some point of his drinking, he loses control. So don't let anyone tell you, well, if you're not drinking all the time, you're not an alcoholic. We've totally debunked that myth, and we've approached this notion of it's not a matter of frequency or how often I drink, it's intensity. Once I drink, do I lose control over how much I take or when I'm going to stop? That is really the determinant factor in whether I'm an alcoholic. So they're hoping that this has been driven home so far. If, when you honestly want to find, you cannot quit entirely, right? Or when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. Pretty much a very good one-line distinction. You don't have to answer 100 questions. If this is true, you probably got this. Now, if that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience would conquer. And that's where we're at. We're at that point where we understand self-knowledge, willpower, fear, all these things are great. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's great to understand about the physical allergy and the mental obsession. And then it's great to play the tapes once in a while. But what's going to happen is, you know, it says at most times, at certain times, alcoholics will not be able to call into their mind with sufficient force the pain, misery, and suffering of even a week or a month ago. They will be without an effective mental defense against the first drink. It just says at certain times. It doesn't say all the time. So 99% of the time, I could think back, I could logically put the connection together, and I could say, listen, I don't want to have that drink. And that's the part of the program that's the willpower and the self-knowledge. But we're here to talk about that 1%. We're here to try to make this a lock. And if you want to make this a lock, that somehow this connection's got to be made. And you have the next paragraph, Tom?
I do.
Okay.
Just briefly, you know, my first experience with the big book, I was like 3 months in, and I picked it up, saw there was a chapter called We Agnostics, and skipped straight to it. And a minute later, I got disgusted and threw the book across the room. You know, so going through it subsequent times is an interesting experience. I get a very clear look at just what an arrogant ass I used to be. And we're going to touch again upon that in a brief moment. To one who feels he is an atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. But to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he is an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. My sponsor's going to laugh because I tell this story all the time. Just to let you know what an egomaniac I was, I used to identify as an apatheist. For those of you who are familiar with the term, it means that belief or disbelief in God is entirely irrelevant. So it was purely a vehicle for me to feel superior to both atheists and theists. Right? That's how arrogant I was. So just jumping into this, again, on subsequent reads cracks me up a little. It's good to be able to laugh at yourself, you know. To be doomed an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. Unfortunately, that's what we have. There are two doors here. To die an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis. And Rich and I were talking about this earlier this morning. A guy came up to him once and was like, well, what kind of death are we talking about? Right? I'll tell you. To live in untreated alcoholism is to die an early death. It's to die in misery and penury. Period. You want to know what kind of death? Check it out. It's not fun. So we spent the past 8 weeks trying to get you to identify with this idea of whether or not I'm an alcoholic. Your options are to die or to live on a spiritual basis. That's the hand we've been dealt. But it's not so bad, you know?
Right. There's some easy... It can be easier than Carl was a match. It's a lot more fun, isn't it, Carl?
It's a lot of fun. I struggled a lot coming to God. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. You know, I wasn't blessed with a white light experience. I fought this, you know? I let myself get in the way quite a bit. But at the end of the day, it isn't so difficult. About half of our original numbers were of exactly that type. At first, some of us tried to avoid the issue, hoping against hope that we were not true alcoholics. But after a while, we had to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life or else. Perhaps it is going to be that way with you, but cheer up. Something like half of us thought we were atheists or agnostics. Our experience shows us that you not need be disconcerted.
And I'd like to add that, you know, I don't like to kind of throw out my religious beliefs to anyone. So I just don't do it. Because I absolutely am convinced that you can be an atheist and still get sober. I believe you can be a Buddhist, any type of religion that you could be. So I don't want to come and say, you know what, at this point we're talking about, you know, the Holy Trinity and this and that. I believe that this religious or spiritual experience is extremely personal. And it's not something that I give to you. It's something you discover on your own. And it's not so hard going once you open ourselves up to the fact of the possibility of the existence. You see what I mean? It's not like, oh my God, I'm going to take Richard's God and I'm going to run with it. No. We're going to help you to kind of cultivate that experience where maybe, like Bill, what did Bill do? He set aside some of his old prejudices. His intellectual pride about what he thought was and was not God, right? And he was open to a new experience. And that's all we're really hoping that we can help other people get to a point where they can realize for themselves. Because once someone tells you, hey, look, this is God, run away from that person. Run away from that person. Because God is something that's in here. It's not something that's out there. Everyone has a personal experience with God. You want to say something?
Just briefly.
I got the next read. So
you do. You absolutely do. I promise you can get the next paragraph. I've been dying to share this for weeks, and Rich is like, we're not opening the God box yet.
Oh, right. Then. Now open it up, Carl.
Excuse me. I'm very sick. So on this idea of different religions, right, somebody told me once that God is an overflowing lake on a mountaintop, and there are streams pouring down every side. And standing in one stream, you might be Catholic. Standing in another stream, you might be Buddhist. You might be Christian. You might be some denomination of Christian. But it all comes from the same place.
Exactly.
And most importantly, you don't judge someone just because they're in a different place on the mountain. Because at the end of the day, it's all coming from the same place. And I've been wanting to say that for 7 weeks now.
Yeah.
There's no need to clap. Just another bozo on the bus. But I love that story because that changed a lot when I heard it. You know? I went through this experience where, and I've heard it's a common experience. I've talked to a lot of people about this, but right around the time I was like halfway through my amends, I got really, really big for my britches, and I started thinking that my way was the only way. And somebody shared that story with somebody. Told me that I was the most arrogant person he had ever met after a speaking commitment. And copped a resentment, went home, inventoried, was like, oh my God, what's wrong with me, you know? And I heard that story shortly thereafter, and I love it, and I love sharing it. So that's it. You can, I promised you the next paragraph, you can take it now.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you so much. Okay. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life was sufficient to overcome alcohol, many of us would have recovered long ago. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. We could wish to be moral, we could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could wish all of these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. Now, I won't tell you what this means, period. I will tell you what this means to me. And what this means to me is that it's not so much as a matter of I go to church every Sunday and I have a set of morals, do unto others as they would do unto you. These are all good things to have, and they're really important that you have a lead, you know, you hear the voice. But we're not talking about the morals of people. We're talking about being able to be tuned in to hear the voice that's talking to you. You know, so if going to church on Sundays was enough, then we'd all be in church and boom, this would happen. But it's something more that they're trying to produce. It's some kind of effect that enhances that, you know, it's coupled with a moral experience. We don't, we think people that go to church and all that's great. It's great because they've made that connection. But you can go to church, you know, and still talk about your neighbor. You could go to church and still be not connected. So the type of connection that we're talking about making is somehow one step past or away from that. Let's not even say past. I don't want to say it's better than or worse than. But we're trying to produce this condition. So that's what that means to me. And our human resources, as marshaled by the will, are insufficient. Once again, goes back to the convincing thing of like, I'm going to tough it out and I'm going to do this. I have a philosophical outlook. I know that this is the appropriate way to live a life. I've read the seven moral codes of, you know, ex-philosopher. But in and of itself, we found that these do not work. And as my promise to Kyle is all squiggly lines, except when I feel really set, I will go to him. So go ahead, Kyle. You get that.
Lack of power. That was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live. And it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how are we to find this power? Rich and I got a little heated talking about this. My very first, this is how active God was in my life, despite the fact that I did not believe in him at the time. My very first meeting, somebody shared that you can have a horizontal higher power. And we were talking about this and how this, Rich and I were talking about how this power greater than ourselves can be anything at this point, so long as it isn't me. And again, because I'm so grandiose, I'm getting caught up. No, but I tried that and it didn't work for me, right? So obviously it can't work for you. But it's not my job to tell you what your experience is going to be, how you have to do it. It's my responsibility to tell you what it was like for me. For me, horizontal higher power got me 6 months and very, very sick. But at this point, this power greater than ourselves, Rich is absolutely right. At this point, I don't care if it's a chair, if it's a light bulb, as long as it isn't you.
Now let's unwind that a bit. And say that I don't even know what a horizontal higher power is, okay? But I understand the rest of the stuff, Carl, but we'll talk about that later. But this whole notion of, like, what is that higher power for individuals? I don't think we're trying to say at this point, hey, man, everyone's got to have this kind of religious experience. But we have to get on board with starting it. Let's say you're an atheist now, and I'm working with you, and you don't believe in God at all. Right? Well, then that works beautifully, because then if you don't play, you can't play something that you are not. So God knows supposedly more than everybody. You can be an atheist and say, but still think you know more than everybody. Maybe it's just a matter of this. It's like, this is a glass, this is a cup. And that cup, right, is filled with water right to the brim, right? So maybe now that represents all the knowledge in your brain. And I come along and I say, okay, now I'm going to pour some of this information about higher power and God into your brain, right? But I can't, because anything I pour in will just spill over the top. So maybe the beginning of this relationship is something about emptying out a little bit. We're not saying, hey man, dump out everything you know. We're saying, maybe if you give us 10% of what you think you know, maybe that's enough to make a start. And what does 10% look like? 10% could absolutely look like good orderly direction. 10% could absolutely look like group of drunks. The group of drunks knows more about my illness than I do personally. So I could temporarily say, you know what? The group of drunks. When I go to make one of those critical decisions that I make, you know, the ones that really make my life better, just before I do that, I'm going to reach out and ask somebody else. I'm going to ask somebody I trust in the rooms. Maybe I'm going to make that my higher power just for the beginning. Remember, we're not talking about endings. We're just talking about beginnings. How do you make a start? And if this, obviously, but how do we find this power? Look at this next sentence. So what? It's really encrypted in some type of, you know, cryptic language. Well, that is exactly what this book is about. Oh, God. They were hiding that behind the period. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve all your problems. That means we have written a book which we believe is spiritual as well as moral. Now we get back to that paragraph about the mere code of morals would not be enough. It's not saying that the morals are no good. It's good to have a set of morals. To be decent human being is what we're trying to achieve. I've always said I would do want to rewrite the big book. Oh, I've wanted to rewrite the big book for years. The first thing I would change is the title. I wouldn't call it Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what I would call it? I'd call it How to Be a Decent Human Being. Not How to Be a Spiritual Mahatma Coming from Himalayas and stuff like this. I would call it How to Be a Decent Human Being. Because, you know, in all the years, I'm coming up on 19 years in the program, I have never seen anybody in this room raise above the level of human being. That's all we are. You know, when we talk about the spiritual experience that we're trying to produce, I think of it as like the spiritual alarm clock. We're not trying to say, hey man, we're Mahatmas, we're these great people, and we know all about the spiritual nature of the program. We're saying is we have heard the spiritual alarm clock. And we realize that we must enhance and expand our knowledge of God as we understand Him in order to provide that 1%. Remember, we're looking to add 1% to a program to ensure like a bulletproof sobriety, right? This means, of course, that we're going to talk about God. Here the difficulty arises with agnostics. Many times we talk to the new person and watch his hope rise as we discuss the alcoholic problem and explain our fellowship, but his face falls when we speak of spiritual matters, especially when mentioning God, for we have reopened a subject which our man thought he had neatly evaded and grounded entirely. And this gets me to my... Can I tell the math class story quickly? Mm-hmm. This it's gets me story. To my math class story. I used to give my teacher a hard time in junior high school about mathematics. We were studying algebra, and I was smoking pot, and I was a big... I knew everything. similar to now, but now I really know everything. But I thought I knew everything, and I was telling my teacher all about the uselessness of algebra and all this stuff, and I was giving her such a hard time, and she turned around to me and she said something. I remember it to this day. She said, "Brenton, sit down and shut up." She said, "One day, you're going to have to go through this. Whether you like it or not, one day you're going to have to go through this." But I thought I neatly evaded her. Well, turns out when I got sober and I went back to school because I didn't want to drive a limousine for the rest of my life, I had to go to that math class again. I had to sit through and do all those equations, and I remember her voice, "Sooner or later you're going to have to do this." And I'm going to issue the same kind of warning to everyone. Sooner or later you're going to have to look at your spiritual life. Sooner or later you're going to have to ask yourself those difficult questions about what is my relationship with God? Do I even have a relationship with God? What was it that David said today? Our program is what? Gina, what was it? He said, is your program dynamic?
It's dynamic and revolutionary.
Is it? It said these ideas are dynamic and revolutionary. And he challenged everybody. He goes, is your program dynamic? Is your program revolutionary? Is it really changing you? That's a big question. I thought it was a great question to ask. Do you want to comment on that before you move on to the next paragraph?
I think that last sentence ties in neatly to what I was going to say in the next paragraph, so I can wait.
Okay, well, I think you read the next one, right?
We know how he feels. We have shared his honest doubt and prejudice. Some of us have been violently anti-religious. To others, the word God brought up a particular idea of him which someone had tried to impress upon them during childhood. Perhaps we rejected this particular conception because it seemed inadequate. With that rejection, we imagined we had abandoned the God idea entirely. We were bothered with the thought that faith and dependence upon a power beyond ourselves was somewhat weak, even cowardly. We look upon this world of warring individuals, warring theological systems, and inexplicable calamity with deep skepticism. We looked askance at many individuals who claimed to be godly. How could a supreme being have anything to do with it all? And who could comprehend a supreme being anyhow? Yet in other moments we found ourselves thinking, when enchanted by a starlit night, who then made all this? There was a feeling of awe and wonder, but it was fleeting and soon lost. Great paragraph. We have shared his honest doubt and prejudice. There's a reason the phrase crisis of faith exists. You know, I went through the 12 steps. I had a god-awful manic episode earlier this year. After 6 days sleep and you've lost your mind and you're hearing things and you doubt. And to doubt is human. It's not a failure. So first of all, just let's touch that real quick. To doubt is human. And I'm sure I'll piss some people off with that. But I don't really care. I'm up here to share my experience. And when you're in hell, it's okay to doubt. It's human. To others, the word God brought up a particular idea of him which someone had tried to impress upon them during childhood. I grew up Catholic. We've discussed this. Perhaps we rejected this particular conception because it seemed inadequate. I was talking with some guys in my network at dinner on Friday. And at the end of the day, the more you try to put God in a box, the less God can do for you. Kind of, you know, God defies explanation. I mean, perhaps not for everyone. For me, certainly, I'm just not that clever. You know, I could sit here and talk to you for 3 hours about what I think God is, and we still wouldn't begin to touch it. And the more I try to confine and define God, the less God is able to do for me. So this idea of a rigid, judgmental God that hated me because I was a sinner, when Rich talks about that, I identify so much. I was a troubled kid, man, and God did not like troubled kids, you know? With that rejection, we imagined we had abandoned the God idea entirely. I turned my back. It's so funny, you know, God never abandoned me. I abandoned God when I was 14. Shortly before my first suicide attempt, and I thought I was done. That was it. I knew everything there was to know, but God God doesn't abandon us. God is always there. He is concerned with us when we are concerned with Him. You know, my sponsor told me something great not too long ago, and I told him I was going to steal it. God doesn't test us. We test God, ultimately. You know, God has always been there for me. I keep surviving things that should kill me. There has to be a reason. There has to be a reason that God always forgives and is always there for me the second I am done doubting and I am ready to believe again. We look upon this world of warring individuals, warring theological systems, inexplicable calamity with deep skepticism. What failed Bill? What did he have to destroy in order to have this experience? His intellectual pride. You know, it's here we are looking around at the Muslims and Christians, and we're thinking, oh no, these guys can't be right. They can't be right. They can't agree on anything. They haven't agreed on anything in 2,000 years. Who the hell am I to judge? Ultimately, we've touched on this before. We will touch upon it again before we're through. The second I judge you, I've lost touch with God. Period. Love and tolerance of others is our code. And the second I judge, who the hell am I to judge? I'm the guy who didn't self-care for 15 years, you know? And we look around at this imperfect world and think, how could a supreme being have anything to do with this? And who can comprehend a supreme being anyhow? That's a great sentence. You know, we talk about in our third step, in our 11th step, God as we understood Him. Understanding is not a complete thing. It's not static. It's not perfect. Some days I get it a little more than others, but it's not about, again, putting God in a neat little box. God is as big as creation. I don't see the point in trying to confine it, you know? And the more I do that, the sicker I get. And despite all this doubt, now I used to go hiking a lot, and nature, even when I was a hippie, I'd haired like down to my ass, and I'd smoked grass 5 times a day, you know, and I was a hippie, sort of. you'd be out in nature and think, there's something fundamentally beautiful about this. There's something magical. For me, concerts are extremely spiritual, and people like recovered alcoholics look at me cross-eyed when I say this. But you're there with 90,000 people, and there's something electric going on. There's something much more than human going on. And you can feel it. It's in the air. You feel it all throughout your body. And there's something so much more than corporeal going on. And you wonder, in my arrogance, when I didn't believe, and there's this nagging doubt, which we're going to touch upon again, you know, this idea of everyone being born with a sense of God. You wonder, this can't be it, can it? There's got to be something else.
And also, Kyle, I'd like to just say, on that paragraph, 146 on the top paragraph, we're talking a lot about intellectual pride. We're talking a lot about someone making a lot of assumptions about what God is and what God is not and what God roles God plays. So remember, to get the recovery that Bill got, he had to like melt the icy mountain of his a particular belief system to open himself up to a new concept. So now we're setting you up a little bit. We're saying, look, you know, these are all the reasons why I shouldn't believe, right? But there are some reasons why I should. Now, we talked a little bit about our concept of God. When I first got sober, I had a very small God. You know, I had the God of parking spaces, you know. And my prayer was, Hail Mary, full of grace, help me find a parking space. Because that was what God was to me then. See, so I'm not saying, like, once again, we're not talking about a profoundly deep spiritual experience. We're talking about opening ourselves up to the possibility that we may not know everything. And I'm going to take a little bit of a sidecar here, and I'm going to say, for me, there was a story in this book, I believe it's in A Vision for You, where a fellow falls out of bed and he hears the word, Who are you to say there is no God? He cries out in lamentation to heavens, If there is a God, you know, make yourself available to me. What's going on? And then he hears this voice. Well, you know what we alluded to in the first. Who are we to tell you how to get sober? Who are we to say, hey man, this is the way you're supposed to do it? We're just going to share our experience, strength, and hope that something resonates with you that you might catch on and you might say, hey, you know what? I can identify with that. A thing that turned it around for me, and I went to, of course, to the most important authority of information, Wikipedia, to validate all of these facts that I'm going to tell you. And I'm going to say right now, it is approximately 13.8 billion years since the formation of the cosmos, since the Big Bang, 13.8 billion years. It is about 4.5 billion years that the Earth has been in existence. Right? It is about 4 million years ago, ape-like animals walked upright. 200,000 years ago, humans were first known to exist. 6 million years ago, we were just tadpoles. Right? So, think about it. I live, if I'm lucky, 100 years. Right? And I'm looking at a 13.8 billion years, and I'm saying in 100 years, I could definitively tell you that there is or is not a God. Who are you to say there is no God? And in the same sense, I could say, who are you to say there is a God? So I'm at the point where I'm experiencing neutrality. I'm not saying, hey man, I'm here to prove to you that God exists. But I'm damn sure saying I do not have enough information to prove to you that God does not exist. So now all of a sudden, instead of being this person who's blaming God, who's making these judgments about who God is and how could God exist in such a world that's filled with turmoil and blah, 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 I'm not having that conversation anymore because that conversation is not capable for me to understand. I can't wrap my head around it. How in God's good earth could anyone in this room definitively say one way or another? Well, that puts me in a very interesting position. Because at that position, the only thing I'm doing is I'm trying to keep an open mind and I'm trying to bear witness. Can I see? Is there something around me? Is there any indication that there is? Someone told me, I think Pat said it today at the meeting. He said, I see it as I witness people getting sober. I witnessed people getting sober who were hopeless. Hopeless. That I never thought in a million years would get sober. And here they are getting sober. I see it in my own life. I don't see it in myself. And neither does my wife. But I see it all around me. So maybe at this point, I'm not talking about, hey, get with it. But just, hey, stop, get off. Stop playing God. Stop being the judge. Stop thinking that I'm so smart that I know all this. Who am I to say anything about anything? It's just ludicrous. It's hubris at best. So yes, we of agnostic temperament have had these thoughts and experiences. Let us make haste to reassure you, we found that as soon as we are able to lay aside prejudice, that's what we're talking about, right? The prejudice Bill has, the prejudice that's just mentioned here, the prejudice I experienced with my inflated ego thinking that I could actually make that call, right? We were able to lay aside these prejudices and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves. A belief, but just a willingness. See, we were talking about making starts. This is just about making a start. This isn't about the whole enchilada. We commenced to get results, even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend the power, which is God. Kyle, before you comment, can you read this just this? Let's read it, right? Because I want to read this part.
Go ahead.
Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God, our own conception, however inadequate. Remember, however inadequate. Group of drunks, good orderly direction, the light bulb, the bench you're sitting on. It's not about my God. It's about your God. And like I said, when I start off, my God is the God of parking spaces. And someone told me very early in the program, you got to get a bigger God. If your God is small, then only small things can happen. You got to get a bigger God. Now that was a challenge. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and the effect of contact with Him. Once that beginning is made, however inadequate, if you stay with it, there's something it says in our program, more will be revealed. More will be revealed. And that's the thing I'm looking for. I'm looking for more to be revealed. Do you want to read this part, Colin?
Just real quick, God, and I was wondering if we would get through this today. Just briefly, at the top of the page, I forgot to mention that faith and dependence upon a power beyond ourselves is somewhat weak, even cowardly. That is a hilariously arrogant belief that I once held. But ultimately, isn't it safe to rely upon my own knowledge? It's safer. That's the weakness. It takes strength to trust God. Because it's terrifying when you first start. You don't know what's out there. You're just hoping and praying and you're reaching out beyond yourself. That's the strength. This another thing that you mentioned, Rich, I've heard a couple of times from recovered alcoholics that they know definitively that there is a God. And wow, what a grandiose statement. You have this on a stone tablet, do you? You know, it's not about knowing, it's about belief. So, I'm aware that I'm handing out resentments left, right, and center tonight. So, thanks for having me. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. We found that God does not make too hard terms with those who seek Him. To us, the realm of the Spirit is broad, roomy, and all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men. There are no special requirements to get this whatsoever. We talked about this in the second appendix a couple weeks ago. We're probably going to touch on it again in a couple paragraphs. There are three essentials to this: openness, open-mindedness, willingness, and honesty. And I believe that if you hold those three things in your heart, they will lead you to God. It's what worked for me. It's what worked for everyone I know in this program who's gone through the work. I can't tell you for certain it's going to work for you. I can tell you it worked for me like a charm. And it's worked for so many people that I've met. But again, it's not my job to tell you exactly what's going to happen for you and exactly how it's going to happen. But here's this idea again that I think we've tried really, really hard to impress upon you guys, that the realm of the Spirit is all-inclusive, always, period. We don't judge, we don't exclude, ever. That is not our place.
Does that mean, Kyle, that people that say, just don't drink and go to meetings, it's okay?
It's okay. It's okay if that's what's okay for them.
Yeah.
So not my place to say that's not going to work for you. Maybe it will. It didn't work for me. When is my job to tell you that?
And you never know what somebody needs to get one more day. You don't know. And maybe that one day that they come the next day because they hear somebody say, hey, just put the plug in the jug, and they come the next day. Maybe that's the day they get the message. You don't know what someone else needs to get this program. This is a wonderful example of how AA is getting out of its own way. Stop it. It's not, you know, you can be an atheist and you can get sober. You don't have to believe like I believe. But I believe once you open yourself up to this notion of neutrality, from my personal experience, I don't know if you will have that experience. I have lived the line, my favorite line in the big book, is what seemed at first a flimsy reed turns out to be the loving hand of God. When I first came in this program, I wouldn't, in a million years, you couldn't have convinced me that this relationship I had with the higher power was going to be pivotal in my recovery. As a matter of fact, it was going to give me that one extra percent I needed. I wouldn't have told you. You're absolutely out of your mind. And I do not sell incense at airports. But what seemed at first a flimsy reed turns out to be the loving hand of God. But it will not happen unless I'm ready to lay aside some old prejudices. And then, so the next paragraph reads, when therefore we speak to you of God, we mean a God of your conception, of your own conception. This applies to other spiritual expressions which you find in this book. Do not let any prejudice you may have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you. At the start, this was all we needed to commence spiritual growth, to effect a first conscious relationship with God as we understood Him. Afterwards, we found ourselves accepting many things which then seemed entirely out of reach. That was growth. But if we wish to grow, we had to begin somewhere. So we used our own conception, however limited. Don't say that your God can be the tiniest, tiniest God. But it's just enough to make the beginning. Remember, we talked about in Jim's story and in Fred's story, what do we see? Failure to enlarge a spiritual experience. Thought that I could do it on self-knowledge and willpower. The necessary ingredient was this spiritual experience. But we're not saying that it's too hard to get when you place yourself in the position of neutrality. And that's all what we're saying. We're not telling you God exists or God does not exist. We're saying stop being so arrogant to think that you can make that call and start being in a position of neutrality. And maybe you can open yourself up to a spiritual life. And what do we say in the programs, right? Religion is for people who don't want to go to hell, and spirituality is for people who have been to hell and do not wish to return. So this is our thing. This is what we need to find. We need to find that connection, because without that connection, suddenly is going to happen. Last week, someone mentioned they didn't believe in suddenly. And they believe that people unwind the steps. You know, you stop going to meetings and you go backwards and stuff like that. And that's under more has been revealed. But the truth is, this book doesn't say that. We're not here to talk about things that they don't say in this book. Maybe that was more that was revealed. That's great. We accept that. It's beautiful. But we're not here to talk about that. We're only here to talk about what we're reading and our interpretation of it, with the emphasis that it's just our interpretation. So now you're there, right, Kyle?
Yes. We needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. And here we are again with a little tiny asterisk telling us to check out 568, which I don't think, so grandiose. But I don't think enough people talk about the second appendix. Because it's huge, because starting off, I was convinced before I actually read it that I needed to have this white light, hardcore, hearing the voice of God spiritual experience. When at the end of the day, if I hear another voice, I need to talk to my doctor, because some levels need to be adjusted, you know? I came to God. That's a true story. You're laughing, but that's
I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing with you.
That's a true story. I came to God very slowly, and that's okay. No one has a minute. What we just talked about this. The room of the Spirit is all inclusive. There is no one correct way to meet God. Period. I came to God very slowly. I don't recommend it. I think it would be great if everyone could have the white light experience. I certainly didn't. Most people I know didn't. And it's not a cookie cutter thing. Again, this idea of willingness. A long time ago, somebody tried to impress upon me the difference between willingness and willfulness. And ultimately, how many times have we talked about willpower failing us, willfulness failing us? It's about willingness. Am I even willing to believe? Not do I believe. Am I willing to believe? Am I well and truly ready to do whatever it takes to get well? It took me a long time to get to that point. I was all about half measures when I got here, you know? I was all about half measures. But all it takes is willingness, and upon that one tiny little grain, we can build you a spiritual structure. You don't have to start off believing in God, having a hardcore, fully formed conception of God. It's not about that. Are you willing? Are you willing to change? Are you willing to grow? Are you willing to learn?
And Kyle, we're not going to read the spiritual experience again, because we already read that in a previous session, but you know, it just talks about the two different types of experiences. One is the white light, and the other is the, you know, over time growing and coming to cultivate that spiritual experience. But I will sum up the last paragraph and say, you know, the thing that there is something that will keep a man in everlasting darkness, and that is contempt prior to investigation. And a lot of the stuff we've been talking about here is about opening ourselves up to this notion of not being so prejudice, not taking some of our old concepts and porting them over to our addiction and using them as justifications to shy away from a spiritual life, but actually keeping an open mind and approaching it with a kind of a new look. And as we do that, the next paragraph reads, right, that was great news for us, for we had assumed that we could not make use of spiritual principles unless we accepted many things on faith which seemed difficult to believe. Once again, you know, we're not touting any specific religion, but we know that sometimes people find it very difficult to believe. You know, let's take heaven and hell off the table. Let's just say heaven and hell does not exist, you know, for argument's sake, right? Because some of these concepts are difficult to master or to understand, because in our era, we live in a modern era where we try to dismiss things that cannot be proved scientifically by saying, this is just fiction. You know, do we have to truly believe in God? Maybe we have to believe in Santa Claus too, or maybe the Easter Bunny in order to get sober, right? But what we're saying is that that we're closing ourselves off when we shut down ourselves and say and kind of dismiss things, right? So this starting, this spiritual principles make things on faith which seem difficult to believe. And I get back to that notion of, yeah, it might be difficult to believe, but if you set aside some of the old ideas, maybe it's just about cultivating a new relationship, something different. You know what I mean? Which I'm not saying the concept of heaven and hell is wrong. It's just, it is. It is what it is. But most people have a very hard time absorbing some of traditional religious beliefs because they feel that it's a scientific era we live in. And everything has to be proven scientifically. And we're going to talk a little bit about that in a second. But remember now, you know, in a way, we're throwing out the baby with the bathwater. We're dismissing a lot. And what we're dismissing is a spiritual part of our lives, as if that doesn't exist. But let me tell you, how many people who live in the material world of our lives, of possessions and jobs and things and business and success, really find that satisfying and fulfilling? I think in all of us, there's a sense of emptiness, something missing. And that missing spiritual component is something that we kind of easily evaded or pushed out, because we're so ready to believe in science and so unready to believe in things that we couldn't really explain. But what they say, there is more to heaven and earth, Horatio, than I dreamt of in your philosophy. And this is true. So, do we want to say something or go on from there, Kyle? I think we're almost out of time. Kyle was like worried. He's saying, I think we're going to run out of the material. But we had decided, we said, you know, there's a guy named Joe Gannon. I love Joe Gannon. He's a kind of hard-nosed, kind of, you know, 1, 2, 3 and out kind of guy. And we love him. He's great. He's in Union, and he does a lot of detox work. And he says, you know, really, we can't do the steps with you. We could do 1, 2, 3, and you're out. In other words, like, you know, I can't, he can, let him. So if we spent our entire 4 weeks just kind of talking about the notion of God and getting to that point where you're at that third step decision, then we'd feel like, hey, man, we did a great job, because then you're going to pair off with a sponsor, you're going to do the steps and all this stuff. But that's how we're not taking an approach to this thing like, man, we're going to rush through it and we're going to give you the Blazing Saddles kind of version of this. So we're just going to give you what it is that comes out, what the Spirit moves us to say. We always want to leave a little time, right, Kyle? Do you want to wrap it up and then we'll turn it over?
So it was comforting to learn that we could commence at a simpler level. Lately, the past couple months, I've been thinking a lot about my Uncle Norby, who I've mentioned here before was a Franciscan and very hardcore, very, very knowledgeable. He spoke like 1,000 languages and hardcore tonsure, rope belt, frock, whole nine yards. Make me an instrument of your peace, Franciscan. I'm kind of clever, but I also needed to like dumb this way the hell down. Starting off, I couldn't get with hardcore religious concepts. I needed to start extraordinarily basic. And starting off, I got excellent advice from an unlooked for place. Somebody told me, "Why does God have to be anything more than love?" And these things change over time. My conception of God hasn't been static over the course of my time in recovery. But as far as basic starting points, I think you could do a lot worse than that.
And I guess with that, we'll turn it over to Denise for the show of hands.
Can we have a show of hands? Once again, we've come to the end.